Announcements for today, as a reminder, mentioned this last class, I'll be out of town all of next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're going to continue the course. Recorded lectures will be posted online. Post those after Friday's lecture, just so I can queue them up to wherever we get by Friday. And I will ask somebody to come in and show them during class time. If you want to just stick to the normal class schedule, I'll just play the lectures at that time. Okay. And then I've posted homework 5 early. I'm going to cover material through the end of class today, maybe some of Friday. That'll be due a week from Friday. Just wanted to get that up early in light of me being out of town. Okay. Any questions on that? Concerns? Okay. Now we're going to hop into our theory. So last time we were looking at an example of applying the state plane analysis in the context of a DCM buck converter. For this DCM buck converter, we were really only looking at the behavior in this interval 3 where both switches are off. I mentioned there will be some resonance happening at the dead time between intervals 1 and 2. We're going to look at the synchronous buck converter next. We'll analyze that in detail there, and it's no different. So we're going to just skip over that for the moment and use our example state plane analysis to examine closer this interval 3. Okay, so we sketched waveforms here, first in red, neglecting any capacitance and just using idealized assumptions, and then going through constructing our equivalent circuit, and then plotting, because I never filled it in, the state plane during the subinterval 3, where we found the center point at a normalized capacitor voltage of N. The initial operating point was 0, 0, the origin of the M switch JL axes. Based on the partial derivatives, we start resonating in this direction and then resonate around, so listen, this dotted circle I just put on here to aid my circle drawing abilities. I should have sketched in that state plane myself. So we resonate around this. And depending on how long we stick in this subinterval 3, we'll just spin around and around and around. Just keep going. And that's the resonance, both voltage and current, the sinusoids, as we kind of drew here. I was asked after class last time why this is exactly one period. And there is no reason at all. Okay, I just drew one, but depending on your characteristic frequency or omega naught and this amount of time, this could be some small segment of a period, it could be 10 periods, could be anything. Okay, it all depends on how long this is, and in that amount of time, how far, how many traversals of this circle do you get? Okay. So it's gonna keep going around this circle at a rate of omega naught until you turn the FET back on. When you turn the FET back on, it'll happen at whatever point the resonance is at. Okay. So ideally, we would like arguments early in the course. We'd like to turn on the FET right here, right? If we do that, we've resonated up until the switch node voltage is at VG. Switch node voltage is at VG, it means there's zero drain to source voltage on the high side FET. And when I turn it on, I'll have no COSS type losses. Okay. That would be great. Whether or not I can do that, well, if I had this type of waveform here, these are the duty cycles that I need to get the output voltage I want based on whatever the load is, then no, T3 has to be this long in order to regulate. If I try to switch on here, I'm going to effectively shorten the period. And in DCM, that's going to mean higher output power and I'll lose output voltage regulation. Okay. If I then change D, I could adjust all 3 times, but I could always do that. That's going to require me to modulate in a time where I have, in a method where I have variable switching frequency. I would have to assuming I want this same average inductor current, and I want to turn on at this point, I would have to switch a little bit earlier here. So I have a little bit less total integral here, because I am then going to resonate up and switch here, and this will be the end of my period. So I need the area under this triangle to be a little bit smaller, because when I calculate the average current, I'm going to be dividing by a smaller period to get that ZBS. Okay. Somewhat of a high level look at that. We'll get into more detail on how that plays out in equations as we move on to the synchronous buck converter. How do you determine output voltage and regulation where the steady state operating point is for given loading condition? I just wanted to mention it here. Questions on that? Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. That's a bad drawing. So I started drawing switch node voltage along with my inductor current, right? It should be something like this, so that the switch node voltage would look like this. Those things are somewhat aligned. That little piece I drew here, I was thinking of switch node voltage, not inductor current. Sorry about that. Okay, so if we modulate in a way such that we can do it, we'd like to switch on right there. For the specific case that we were talking about last night, been on a plane or an airport 12 of the last 24 hours, so bear with me today, please. Last class, we were talking about a specific case where M is equal to a half, which is the output voltage is half of the input voltage. That put our center halfway in between the origin and this point M is equal to 1. M is equal to 1 based on our normalization, the base is VG. So if that switch node voltage is 1, I denormalize, that means it made it to VG. So this is where we want to get for ZVS. This is M sub switch is equal to 1, which is V switch is equal to VG. So this is somewhat of a special case. The output voltage is exactly half of the input voltage. Then as I resonate around, I'm going to just hit this M is equal to 1 point, be tangential, and this is the point I want to switch. What I'm going to look at next is what happens when M is not equal to 1 half. Okay. Before we do, what happens out here? This is the region where M switch is greater than 1, or V switch is greater than VG. That can't happen, right? That would be this voltage, the switch node voltage, going above the input voltage. This diode will clamp, we'll turn it. And will prevent us from going any higher. In our state plane equivalent circuit, we can do that no problem. If I change initial conditions or DC operating point, and resonate wherever. But it means once this diode turns on, this is no longer a valid equivalent circuit for what's happening, right? Once that diode turns on, I have more to the circuit than just a capacitance and inductance. Okay. So out here, M1 body diode prevents this region anything where M switch goes above 1. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I just kind of have a question. So we looked so far at L and C, what happens to the and change the radius?
Right. right? So if you have any resistance in this, then the formulation of how we did this normalized state plane is going to fall apart, because you recall we looked at the second order differential equation and I said I solve it and I get sines and cosines with some constant coefficients, I can normalize those. If you have something that is not infinite Q or is not lossless resonance, then you're going to have sines and cosines multiplied by decaying exponentials, right? And then you're not going to get this nice behavior where everything cancels out and sine squared plus cosine squared is equal to one and it's just a circle. So, seeing with some insight, what happens when you have resistance? So if I let something resonate, it's going to be damped, and the amplitude is going to slowly decay down to zero. On the state plane, what that looks like is, instead of a circle, I'm going to get a spiral, which over a few resonant periods decays down to zero. This is for damped resonance. Okay, so in our undamped case, if I want to switch at this time, what does my T3 interval length need to be? Well, you can look at this and you can say it needs to be pi, and pi over omega naught is the time, so I need to have T3 be that long. Damped, what time do I need? Well, one, I can't get there, but what time is this point at? I don't have a lot of great insight on how to analyze decaying amplitude spirals where the radius is a function of time. So at that point, state plane analysis is not going to be so useful. Plotted on there, but analysis of that, exactly what is the radius here, going to be the only way to really solve that is going to be to go back to the e to the at cosine and sine equation and solve it. So once you have that damping factor in there, oftentimes you're not going to get any utility out of state plane analysis. The reason it's still quite useful is very rarely when you're designing this and trying to design soft switching type circuits, high efficiency converters, are you going to have a situation where you say, okay, now let this ring out for 10 periods, then turn on. Instead, we're going to be looking at traversing one half a resonance, maybe a little bit more, maybe up to one full resonant period, and then turning on. And if you are so heavily damped that you see a significant decay in amplitude over just half a resonant period or one resonant period, your Q is very low and you're going to have a lot of losses. At that point, you probably don't even care. What you're saying is that in the process of achieving ZVS, I've lost all the energy I was going to gain back by zero voltage switching anyway because my Q is so low. So I don't even care to analyze it at that point. I'm losing it no matter what. Okay. Oftentimes, even though there will be some resistance, we've got high enough Q resonance that this is still a good approximation. In fact, we wouldn't quite get zero voltage switching on this ideal one. We'd be a little bit in the boundary case, m is equal to half, probably by a negligible amount. That make sense? Any other questions? Okay. What was next? There was another question after class last time that I just wanted to address with everybody about how we choose the equivalent circuit. So for this one, I took this circuit, moved all the caps in parallel with CD, which resulted in this equivalent circuit. I made the argument that I can put these three caps in parallel with CD because they're all connected to the switch node, which contains the AC variations of this resonance, and then some DC point, which is an AC small signal ground. So I don't care for AC, these resonant perturbations are, they're all effectively grounded here, here, and here. Now, if I want to go further with that argument, a DC source is a short at AC, so I can short this out and get rid of V, right? And that would be fine to do. I could also put all the caps in parallel up here and have an equivalent circuit that looks like VG, CEQ, LV. I can short out both these sources and have something that looks like LCEQ, or I can do what I did, this, if one of these is correct, well, they're all correct. They're all fine ways to approximate the AC dynamics of this, the resonance. Why did I choose this one? This one, I would argue, gives you a little bit more insight because the voltage on the cap is the switch node voltage, which is something that we're interested in for things like saying, when am I going to get ZVS? When do the body diodes conduct? This one has VDS1 as the cap voltage, which is just VG minus the switch node voltage. But to look at what's happening in the switch node, I'd have to take my result and apply that. VG minus that result is the switch node voltage. And gain all the same insight out of looking at the high side voltage. It's just sometimes less intuitive than the switch node voltage with respect to ground. And here, the voltage on this cap is VL. And I kind of know, in this case, I've shorted it out and gotten rid of it, but I know alpha voltage plus VL is the switch node voltage. I could regain that back. But what I plot on the state plane isn't going to be the switch node voltage anymore. It's going to be the inductor voltage. And this is generally true as we go through the simplification process of creating an AC equivalent circuit. Every simplification I make is destroying DC information on something. Okay? So when I made this equivalent circuit, this thing proper does not tell me what the actual voltage is on CL or the high side. The what was my circuit? Doesn't actually tell me what CDS, the voltage on it is, or what the voltage on CL is, because I've simplified those caps away. It tells me the actual voltage on CD, and it tells me the AC perturbations on these, but to get back the actual voltage, I have to put that DC information back in there. So every time I put a cap over here in parallel making this AC equivalent assumption, I'm destroying the DC information on that cap to get it back. I'm going to have to look back at this circuit and say, okay, what's the actual voltage on this? The AC perturbation I solved here, but it has B on the other side. I got to add that back in. Okay. So any of these are fine as long as when you interpret those results, you go back and say, what is the actual voltage I have in my state plane? And how do any of these other caps voltages relate to that? Does that make sense? In each case, what I'm actually plotting on the state plane, this equivalent cap voltage, is going to have the same resonant behaviors. It's just going to shift the DC point around. It's going to move the whole thing in the state plane. Initial conditions are also going to change. But think back to when we solved the second order differential equations, the DC terms were constant, and the ACs all dependent on the resonance radius. The resonant frequency, these things are going to stay the same. It's just going to shift around where it starts. So generally best to simplify in a manner that is going to be the most insightful for what you're trying to solve. Here I kept the switch node voltage because I'm concerned about things like ZVS. I want to be able to see that, look at it on the state plane and say, what's the switch node voltage doing? No questions, then we will move on. And as promised, we're going to look at this DCM buck converter for cases other than this kind of special one where conversion ratio was 1/2. And in the next two slides, we'll look at state planes for M greater than 1/2 and state plane for M less than 1/2. I think in the order I have them, I'm actually going to do them backwards. I'm going to go to M less than 1/2 first and then come back to M greater than 1/2. So when I talk about changing the conversion ratio, this is just a copy of the ideal waveforms that we drew last class. This was for, here's my output voltage when M is equal to 1/2, roughly. Drew V as 1/2 the amplitude of the input voltage. If M is less than 1/2, let's draw V somewhere here. And the rest of my period the same. My ideal waveforms would look like this. And then what's going to happen when I include the effect of parasitic capacitance during these intervals? Let's see. I'm calling it CEQ, C switch. I changed up my nomenclature here a little bit. Apologize for that. CEQ, same thing as C switch in this discussion. And I'll go back to C switch here for consistency. So when I did my analysis before the state plane, I was centered at the conversion ratio, which is to say my DC bias on the capacitor voltage is the output voltage. That's still going to be true. My initial operating point when the diode shuts off, can be zero current and zero voltage, that's still going to be true. So really everything I drew here is still going to be true. The only difference is where it is in relation to this M is equal to 1 point. Where it is in relation to the high side body diode turning on is going to change. So if I shrink M, my center is going to move this way, my radius is going to get smaller, and my circle is going to shrink. Still going to start here, it's just going to be smaller. I'm still going to resonate up to 2M. 2M is going to be less than 1 if M is less than 1/2. That means here, when I draw my actual behavior with this cap considered, I'm going to resonate up to twice M. And my switch node voltage is going to look like this, a smaller amplitude ringing here. Here I drew two full periods. Like I said before, all depends on the length of this time relative to the characteristic frequency of the resonance. So I just drew two periods. Let's draw something else. Okay. From that, I can immediately conclude I have no hope of zero voltage switching this thing, right? When I turn on the MOSFET here, no matter where in this resonance I am, I have no way of having this voltage be VG. I'll never be able to turn on that MOSFET with 0 volts across it. I'm always going to hard switch some. If I switch this peak, I'll have a minimum amount of voltage. Switch this valley, I'll have the full VG. COSS losses according to the full VG. In the other case, M is greater than 1/2. My V would be somewhere up here, and rest of the period the same. And I'm again going to ring out centered around my DC bias, which is that output voltage. I'll have something that looks like this. In my state plane, as I sketched it previously. Any problem with that? You can't get there, right? So if I could do this, that be true? I might overvoltage it. The problem is this is telling me my switch node voltage goes above the input. That can't happen. High side body diode is going to turn on. So my LC equivalent circuit, AC equivalent, is going to predict this. I need to go back and look at my actual buck converter and say, well, that's outside of my bounds. I've gone beyond this limit to the diode limit, and that diode has been simplified out of the circuit. So this is only going to be correct until right here. At this point, high side body diode turns on, and then the rest of this doesn't actually happen. A little bit messy there, apologize. That's going to change my circuit, and then for the rest of this, I can no longer consider just the LCD circuit. Body diode turns on, it changes the behavior, that'll clamp the voltage. Okay. So look at that in the next couple of slides. Like I said, let's look at the M is less than a half case first. That'll be quite simple to do. There's one thing I want to develop on that. So presuming that this circle that I have drawn on here is the same one I drew previously. This is M is equal to 1. This is the trajectory for M is equal to 1/2. When M is less than a half, instead of my center being here, I'm going to have M somewhere down here. And that's going to be my new center. I'll have a smaller radius R. But all of my analysis is going to be the same. If I did the partial derivatives, it's again going to tell me derivatives at the initial operating point are going to tell me I'm going this way, and I'm going to spin around this new center with this decreased radius here. And depending on the exact magnitude of M, this may get me up above a half. But if M is less than a half, I know I'm not going to make it all the way to this zero voltage switching point. Oh, man. I said I was going to go, and I didn't skip slides. I wanted to draw that here. Sorry. Let's swap these slides. This is the M is less than a half. This will be the M is greater than a half. My mistake. This is M. It's less than a half. So I'm going to use this to introduce something that in most of these resonant dead time intervals we're going to be concerned with, which is from the state plane, what is the conditions, what essentially are the conditions necessary to be able to achieve ZDF? Okay. So I need my switch node voltage to get here. To turn on FET with ZVS. And clearly for this M is less than a half case, I'm not going to be able to do that. From the state plane more generally, I can say what are the conditions for me to be able to get here. And they are basically that I need this maximum point, call this M max, to be greater than or equal to 1. It's greater than 1, I'm going to have the case where I have some diode conduction. I won't actually get out there. But if during this resonance it tells me I make it here or higher on the M switch axis, that means I can turn on the FET with ZVS. Okay. So ZVS condition for this interval is I need M max to be greater than or equal to 1. M max is this point. This is a circle. The distance between the center and this point is the same as the difference between the center and this point. Those are both R. So I can say M max is equal to my center plus the radius for a center lying on this axis. My maximum normalized voltage that I'll get to is always when the radius is directly to the right. And given where I start in this DCM buck converter, M is equal to R. R is the distance between M and zero. So R equals to N, and I can say M max is equal to 2 times M. So combining this with this, I can say my ZVS condition is 2M greater than or equal to 1. So to say I need M, my conversion ratio, greater than or equal to 1 half. Makes sense. Now we're drawing these. Okay, let's look now. I got these backwards. Let's look at the M greater than a half case. So what's going to happen here? Again, assume this is my M is equal to 1/2 trajectory. Which again has no bearing on what's happening for M is greater than a half. I'm just putting it on there to showcase how things have changed relative to this special case. For that, we had a half and 1. Being these 2 points, for M is greater than a half, I'll have M somewhere. Let's draw it here. And all my analysis from before is going to apply. All I'm doing is changing the size of this circle. This is going to be R. This is my DC op point, which will be the center of my circle. So this thing is going to spin around with this radius, which is greater than what it was before. I try to draw this. Looks something like that. Give it one more shot. Best I can do. Where it continues to have this new radius R. And for my closed circuit, that would just spin around with a greater radius. However, like we said, this now crosses out into this impermissible region. If M switch goes greater than 1, the circuit changes. The high side body diode turns on, and we can no longer analyze this LCD circuit to predict the behavior of the converter. So this analysis is going to be valid up to this point right here. Draw another radius. We're going to resonate up until we hit this point, at which time high side body diode will turn on and the circuit will change. This is the same thing as our argument here. I said this behavior on this yellow curve valid only until we resonate up to the input voltage. Then S1's body dial will clamp and our filament surface will change. With the same arguments as before, if we're really on top of our game, we can turn on the FET here. If we turn it on right at that point, we won't actually turn on the high side body dial, but that requires that we've designed our operation such that the exact length of this T3 interval is omega naught times this angle, theta. That can be true. We turn on the FET there. We end up with operation that looks like resonate up and then clamp a nice DVS transition. If not, we're still going to have some clamping, but we're going to stay with both with the FET off and only our uncontrolled diode. So then what's going to happen? To look at that, I'm going to redraw the switch node voltage here and examine what will actually happen during subinterval 3. We're saying m is greater than a half, dial is shut off, the voltage will resonate up to VG. And then here, that body diode turns on. Here, I'll plot the inductor current, IL. Now from there, it started at zero, and it resonated around to some negative value. And I can see that that negative value is whatever J is at this point. So I traverse the same, little bit more than quarter of a resonant period. So during this, we were analyzing our equivalent circuit LVC switch. Now the high side body diode turns on. What we have is an equivalent circuit that looks like our input voltage clamped through the body diode. VC switch. LV. So here's the high side device, assuming lossless body diode turns on. What does this circuit do? Well, it clamps a voltage across this capacitor and it locks the voltage VG minus V on the inductor. So this is just a simple linear interval. This voltage isn't changing. The inductor current is changing linearly with a slope VG minus V over L. VG minus V over L is a buck converter, so that should be positive. I'm going to have an inductor slope that looks like this. And I'm going to have a switch node voltage that's just clamped. Oops. That's my axis. Resonant. Body diode turns on, and I go to this linear type circuit. Call that non-resonant, just not to confuse with. They're all linear. I just mean that the inductor current is increasing with constant slope by that non-resonant will be a better term. Okay. So the inductor current is all flowing this direction, 0 dV/dt, so there's no current in this cap. So this is going to continue until the inductor current hits zero, at which point this body diode can no longer conduct. Now having current coming down, drain to source through that device. So now here, that body diode turns off. And I'm going to go back to my resonant circuit with new initial conditions. What does that look like on my state plane? So from here, I go into this diode conduction interval. My voltage doesn't change, and my current decreases to zero. The state plane, that's going to look like a line here. Voltage doesn't change, so I don't move on the m-axis. My current drops to zero here. JL is equal to zero. This JL is just a scaled version of IL. When IL is zero, JL is zero. Then at this point, I go back into the same resonant circuit. This resonant circuit is going to have the same DC solution, which is this center that we had from before. The difference is now my initial condition is here instead of here. So I'll have a new radius, R2, and I'll begin resonating around that. My center is still the output voltage V, which is greater than a half. And I'm going to resonate like this, inductor current. Something like that. And then at that point, now I can resonate freely for any number of periods without going high enough to turn on the high side body diode, or conversely, having the voltage go low enough to turn on the low side body diode. Does that make sense? Any questions on this? Okay, so key point in all of that is don't get lost in your state plane analysis. Okay. So once you reduce the circuit into this equivalent resonant circuit, you can analyze it and it'll have its own behavior. You need to keep an eye on how that circuit relates to your actual converter and make sure you're not violating any conditions. Any analysis you do on this is only valid insofar as the converter can be modeled by this. Once the diode turns on, this is no longer a valid model of the circuit. Okay. Yeah?
Do you find the time if you're in the non-resonant circuit based on the input?
No. So you can plot these linear intervals on the state plane. They are largely just connections between other resonant intervals, but the angle here has no significant meaning because you've taken now a non-resonant circuit and normalized it according to a resonant impedance. That doesn't give you anything interesting. That being said, you can calculate this time quite easily. You know the slope and you know this current. That's even easier than state plane to calculate, right? It's just rise over run. But if I wanted to solve behaviors of this entire process, I'd have to combine equations derived from my state plane with just equations of regular circuit analysis, non-resonant, and then more equations from a state plane. So in the normalized domain, nothing about this line is interesting. The length of it, I guess in this case it is J, which can be denormalized to an I. In general, doesn't have any significance to normalize what's happening in a VL circuit according to omega naught or R naught. And this angle here won't mean anything. Now, angles on this circle and angles on this arc, still valid. So omega naught times t is theta. But any linear interval that you have, and a lot of the circuits that we're going to look at will have combinations of resonant intervals and these non-resonant intervals. These non-resonant ones, state plane can't be used with these same assumptions. Okay. Again, if I've designed everything and I allow myself to modulate in a certain way with variable switching frequency, what I'd like to do is just turn on the set here, not let all this diode conduction happen, not let the second resonant interval happen. That requires that I've set the overall period such that I can do interval one, then interval two, and then this is the amount of time before the period ends. I'd have to have modulated that way. And I'd have to allow myself the variable switching frequency to be able to do that at different power levels and voltages. Okay, last thing, one other way to look at what happened here is really based on energy. So I have a resonant circuit here where I have this large radius. That's going to cause me to forward bias the high side body diode. And then what I'm doing once I forward bias the high side body diode, I'm having the inductor current dump energy back to the input. Got some current going back to the input source, dumping energy out of this resonant tank until I reach a point where that diode shuts off, at which point I have less energy in the system and I can begin resonating the smaller amplitude. In any case, say plane, the amplitude of this radius is really modeling the total energy in the system as it transfers back and forth between my resonant elements. All right. Other questions on that? Not. What we're going to do is move into looking at the synchronous buck converter, which is same general idea, but I've now used a MOSFET, a controllable device for the low side switch here instead of a diode. The advantage of this is now I can control the conduction of this low side device, and I'm going to eliminate the constraint from my previous analysis that that my interval three, this resonant interval, begins right when the inductor current reaches zero. Now, by having a MOSFET down there, which is a current bidirectional device, I can allow this current to go negative to allow me to change the initial conditions going into my resonance. And what that's going to do is allow me to extend beyond this. Regardless of what my switch timings are and whether or not I design my modulation, if M is less than a half in this DCM buck, I will not get ZVF. I'm going to have to hard switch. I'm going to have COFF loss. And that's just fundamentally because I start here, my center's here. This radius isn't long enough to get me all the way up to achieve ZVS. I have nothing I can do about it. Operating in the synchronous buck, assuming I still have this exact same operating point, I want M less than a half. What I can do is allow my current to go negative, which as I do is going to make my radius longer. If I allow it to go way down here, then I can spin around with a longer radius and still get ZBS. That's going to be the conclusion. We're going to look at how you get that. So let's quickly plot the waveforms and then we'll conclude for today. We're going to look at V switch and IL. We'll just do those two before we conclude. That is, again, V switch is here in the inductor current. Okay, the way this thing is going to operate is I will have the high side device is on, my V switch is VG, when the low side is on, it's zero. And I'm going to operate it in a similar manner to this DCM buck converter. With this circuit, I can do a whole lot of things. I can operate it in CCM, just normal operation. what we're going to do is look at an operation mode akin to DCM, but with this little bit of negative current extension. This is used a lot in literature. It's called things like CRM, DCM, and TCM, depending on the details, just for critical conduction mode, boundary conduction mode, and triangular conduction mode. Okay. Talking about putting it in kind of a boundary between CCM and DCM, but with some modifications to help with switching losses. But what my waveforms are going to look like for the first couple intervals here, they're going to look like DCM waveforms. I'm going to ramp current up from zero. Then I'm going to have a resonant interval, which gets me zero voltage switching for the turn on of M2. Then the current is going to ramp down, and I'm going to potentially allow it to go a little bit negative so that I can ensure that here I can resonate all the way up to VG. And then the current's going to return to zero. So I have four intervals, two dead times, which I'll call T beta, and here T delta, potentially of different times. This interval I'll call T3, third period. And then T1, this interval plus this here. The way I've drawn it, this little section is actually part of this same interval. Just looped it around so I could start from zero. Turns out I'm going to end this dead time not at zero current, end at some value here. This looks a lot like the resonant boost we talked about in the introductory lectures. Where I allow a large ripple, such that I have a large positive current during this dead time, sizable negative current during this dead time. By changing the polarity, I can get resonance both down and up, get both transitions with ZVS. Okay. That's what we're going to try to do. We're going to plot the state plane of first this interval, which is going to look similar to what we did with the DCM buck, just with now a negative current initial condition. And then eventually the state plane over one full period, all as one plot. We'll pick up with that next class. See you then.